So this is from Krishna book, chapter 3, the birth of Lord Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his appearance, birth, and activities are all transcendental, and that one who understands them factually becomes immediately eligible to be transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord's appearance or birth is not like that of an ordinary man who is forced to take birth and accept a material body according to his past deeds. The Lord's appearance is explained in the second chapter. He appears out of his own sweet pleasure. When the time was mature for the appearance of the Lord, the constellations became very auspicious. The astrological influence of the star known as Rohini was predominant. This star is considered to be very auspicious and is under the direct supervision of Brahma. According to the astrological conclusion, besides the proper situation of the stars, there are auspicious and inauspicious moments due to the different situations of the different planetary systems. At the time of Krishna's birth, the planetary systems were automatically adjusted so that everything became auspicious. At that time, in all directions, east, west, south, north, everywhere, there was an atmosphere of peace and prosperity. There were auspicious stars visible in the sky and on the surfaces in all towns and villages and pasturing grounds, and within the minds of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. The rivers were flowing full of waters, and lakes were beautifully decorated with lotus flowers. The forests were full with beautiful birds and peacocks. All the birds within the forest began to sing with sweet voices, and the peacocks began to dance along with their consorts. The wind blew very pleasantly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, and the sensation of bodily touch was very pleasing. At home, the Brahmins, who were accustomed to offering sacrifices in the fire, found their homes very pleasant for offerings. Due to the disturbances created by the demoniac kings, the sacrificial fire had been almost stopped in the houses of Brahmins. But now they could find the opportunity to start the fire peacefully. Being forbidden to offer sacrifices, the Brahmins had been very much distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities. But just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy because they could hear transcendental vibrations in the sky proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The denizens of the Gandharvas and Kinnara planets began to sing, and the denizens of Siddhaloka and the planets of the Charanas began to offer prayers in the service of the Personality of Godhead. In the heavenly planets, the angels and their wives, along with the Vidyadharas and their wives, began to dance. The great sages and the demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers. At the seashore, there was the sound of mild waves, and above the sea, there were clouds in the sky, which began to thunder very pleasingly. When things were adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu, who was residing within the heart of every living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of the full moon over the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty in which the hierarchy of the moon, appeared in the dynasty which is in the hierarchy of the moon. Therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night, because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty wherein the moon is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition. So, by the grace of Krishna, he could appear just like a full moon. There's nothing outside of the ability or the power of Lord Krishna. In an astronomical treatise by the name Kamanikya, the constellations at the time of the appearance of Lord Krishna are very nicely described. It is confirmed that the child born at that auspicious moment was the Supreme Brahman, or the Absolute Truth. Vasudev saw that wonderful child born as a baby with four hands, holding a conch shell, a club, a disc, and lotus flower. Decorated with the mark of Sri Vatsa. Does everybody know what a Sri Vatsa is? It's a little white hair on the chest of the Lord. And it stands for Sri, his consort, divine consort. And Vatsa is the place where... what happens there? Her head, it's the place where it's the place where she rests her head on his chest. Wearing the jeweled necklace of Kostabajun stone, dressed in yellow silk, appearing dazzling like a bright blackish cloud, wearing a helmet bedecked with the Vaidurya stone, valuable bracelets, earrings, and similar other ornaments all over his body, and beautified by an abundance of hair on his head. Remember, he's just a little baby. Due to the extraordinary features of the child, Vasudev was struck with wonder. How could a newly born child be so decorated? Vasudev could therefore understand that Lord Krishna had now appeared, and he became overpowered by the occasion. Vasudeva very humbly wondered that although he was an ordinary living entity conditioned by material nature and was externally imprisoned by Kamsa, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, was appearing as a child in his home, exactly in his original position. No earthly child is born with four hands, decorated with ornaments and nice clothing, fully equipped with all the signs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Over and over again, Vasudev glanced at his child, and he considered how to celebrate this auspicious moment. Generally, this is a quote, generally, when a male child is born, he thought, people observe the occasion with jubilant celebrations. And in my home, although I am imprisoned, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has taken birth. How many millions and millions of times should I be prepared to observe this auspicious ceremony? When Vasudev, who is also called Anakandandubi, was looking at his newborn baby, he was so happy that he wanted to give many thousands of cows in charity to the Brahmins. According to the Vedic system, whenever there is an auspicious ceremony in the Kshatriya king's palace, out of joy, the king gives many things in charity. Cows decorated with golden ornaments and delivered to the Brahmins and sages. Vasudev wanted to perform a charitable ceremony to celebrate Krishna's appearance. But because he was shackled within the walls of Kamsa's prison, this was not possible. Instead, within his mind, he gave thousands of cows to the Brahmins. Much later on, when he finally got out of prison, he actually gave the cows. Right now, he was just giving them in his mind. When Vasudev was convinced that the newborn child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, He bowed down with folded hands and began to offer him prayers. At that time, Vasudeva was in the transcendental position, and he became completely free from all fear of Kamsa. That's the nature of transcendence. One is in his eternal consciousness. One has eternal consciousness. One knows he's eternal. He knows he is completely connected and related to the Supreme Being. There's nothing to fear because there is no death in that consciousness. It is only when we come down to the bodily concept that we begin to have different attachments and possessions and interests, and we want to guard them, or we're fearful that they may be taken away. At that time, we tend to become fearful. So Vasudeva is in this time not at all fearful. The newborn baby was also flashing his effulgence within the room in which he appeared. Vasudeva then began to offer his prayers. My dear Lord, I can understand who you are. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of all living entities, and the Absolute Truth. You have appeared in your own eternal form, which is directly perceived by us. I understand that because I am afraid of Kamsa, you have appeared just to deliver me from that fear. You do not belong to this material world. You are the same person who brings about the cosmic manifestation simply by glancing over material nature. One may argue, this is not the quote, this is the narrator. One may argue that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates the whole cosmic manifestation simply by his glance, cannot come within the womb of Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. To eradicate this argument, Vasudeva said, my dear Lord, it is not a very wonderful thing that you have appeared within the womb of Devaki, because the creation was also made in that way. You were lying in the causal ocean as Mahavishnu, and by your breathing process, innumerable universes came into existence. Then you entered into each of the universes as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Then again, you expanded yourself as Kshiradakshaya Vishnu and entered into the hearts of all living entities and even within the atoms. Therefore, your entrance into the womb of Devaki is understandable in the same way. You appear to have entered, but you are simultaneously all-pervading. We can understand your entrance and non-entrance from material examples. The total material energy remains intact, even after being divided into 16 elements. The material body is nothing but the combination of the five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and what's the last one? Yes. Whenever there is a material body, it appears that such elements are newly created, but actually the elements are always existing outside of the body. Similarly, although you have appeared as a child in the womb of Devaki, you are also existing outside. You are always in your abode, but still you can simultaneously expand yourself into millions of forms. And since Krishna is all-pervading, he is everywhere present simultaneously. One has to understand your appearance with great intelligence, because the material energy is also emanating from you. You are the original source of the material energy, just as the sun is the source of the sunshine. The sunshine cannot cover the sun globe, nor can the material energy, being an emanation from you, cover you. You appear to be in the three modes of material energy, but actually, the three modes of material energy cannot cover you. This is understood by the highly intellectual philosophers. In other words, although you appear to be within the material energy, you are never covered by it. We hear from the Vedic version that the Supreme Brahman exhibits his effulgence, and therefore everything becomes illuminated. We can understand from the Brahma Samhita that the Brahma Jyoti, or the Brahman effulgence, emanates from the body of the Supreme Lord. And from the Brahman effulgence, all creation takes place. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord is the support of the Brahman effulgence. Therefore, originally, he is the root cause of everything. But persons who are less intelligent think that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes within this material world, he accepts the material qualities. Such conclusions are not very mature, but are made by less intelligent. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is directly and indirectly existing everywhere. He is outside this material creation, and he is also within it. He is within this material creation not only as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, he is also within the atom as who? Yes, Kshiradakshayi Vishnu. He is also within the atom. The existence of the atom is due to his presence. Nothing can be separated from his existence. In the Vedic injunctions, we find that the Supreme Soul, or the root cause of everything, has to be searched out because nothing exists independently of the Supreme Soul. Therefore, the material manifestation is also a transformation of his potency. Both inert matter and the living force, the soul, are emanations from him. Only the foolish conclude that when the Supreme Lord appears, he accepts the conditions of matter. Even if he appears to have accepted a material body, he is still not subjected to any material condition. Krishna has therefore appeared and defeated all imperfect conclusions about the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudeva is still praying. My Lord, your appearance, existence, and disappearance are beyond the influence of the material qualities. Because your Lordship is the Supreme Brahman and the controller of everything, there is nothing inconceivable or contradictory in you. As you have said, material nature works under your superintendence, just like a government officer working under the orders of the chief executive. The influence of subordinate activities cannot affect you. Since you are the Supreme Brahman, everything is existing within you. And since all the activities of material nature are controlled by your lordship, none of these activities affect you. You are called Shuklam. Shuklam, or whiteness, is the symbolic representation of the absolute truth because it is unaffected by the material qualities. Lord Brahma is called Rakta, or red, because Brahma represents the quality of passion for the creation. Darkness is entrusted to Lord Shiva because he annihilates the cosmos. The creation, annihilation, and maintenance of this cosmic manifestation are conducted by your potencies, yet You are always unaffected by those qualities. As confirmed in the Vedas, Harir hi niguna sakshat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always free from all material qualities, unquote. It is also said that the qualities of passion and ignorance are non-existent in the person of the Supreme Lord. My Lord, you are the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Great, maintaining order of this cosmic manifestation. Yet, in spite of your being the Supreme Controller, you have so kindly appeared in my home. The purpose of your appearance is to kill the followers of all the demoniac rulers of the world. The purpose of your appearance is to kill the followers of the demoniac rulers of the world, who are in the dress of royal princes, but are actually demons. I am sure that you will kill all of them and their followers and soldiers. I understand that you have appeared in order to kill the uncivilized Kamsa and his followers. But knowing that you are to appear in order to kill him and his followers, he has already killed so many of your predecessors, your elder brothers. Now, how many of his elder brothers did he kill? Yes, six, exactly. Then there's Balaram, but he didn't get killed. Now he is simply awaiting the news of your birth. As soon as he hears about it, he will immediately appear with all kinds of weapons to kill you. Unquote. After this prayer of Vasudev, Devaki, the mother of Krishna, offered her prayers. She was very frightened because of her brother's atrocities. Devaki said, "My dear Lord, your eternal forms like Narayan, Lord Ram, Ayashirsha, Varaha, Narsinga, Vamana, Baladev, and millions of similar incarnations emanating from Vishnu are described in the Vedic literature as original. You are the original because all your forms as incarnations are outside of this material creation." What creation is it in, if you want to call it that? In the spiritual world. That's their... There are literally millions of different incarnations of the Lord in the different Vaikuntha planets. You are original because your forms as incarnations are outside of this material creation. Your form was existing before this cosmic manifestation was created. Your forms are eternal and all-pervading. They are self-effulgent, changeless, and uncontaminated by the material qualities. Such eternal forms are ever cognizant and full of bliss. They are situated in transcendental goodness and are always engaged in different pastimes. You are not limited to a particular form only. All such transcendental eternal forms are self-sufficient. I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord Vishnu. After many millions of years, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahatattva. That's the total material energy. The Mahatattva then enters, by the force of time, into the non-manifested total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic pradhan, that's the most, the smallest manifestation of matter, the pradhan. And the pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the director of the unmanifested total energy and the ultimate reservoir of the... of the material nature. My Lord, The whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies. All the conditioned souls are continually fleeing from one body to another and one planet to another, yet they do not get free from the onslaught of birth and death. But when one of these fearful living entities comes under the shelter of your lotus feet, he can lie down without anxiety of being attacked by formidable death. This statement by Devaki is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself. There the Lord says that even after traveling all over the universe, from Brahmaloka to Patalaloka, one cannot escape the attack of birth, death, disease, and old age. But one who enters the kingdom of God, the Lord says, is never again obliged to come to the material world. Therefore, my Lord, I request you to save me from the cruel hands of Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena. I am praying to your Lordship to please rescue me from this fearful condition because you are always ready to give protection to your servitors. The Lord has confirmed this statement in the Bhagavad Gita by assuring Arjuna, you may declare to the world, my devotees shall never be vanquished. While thus praying to the Lord for rescue, Mother Devaki nonetheless expressed her motherly affection, and she said, I understand that this transcendental form is generally perceived in meditation by the great sages, but I am still afraid because as soon as Kamsa understands that you have appeared, he might harm you. So I request that for the time being, you become invisible to our material senses, or I mean material eyes. In other words, she requested the Lord to assume the form of an ordinary child. My only cause of fear from my brother Kamsa is due to your appearance. My Lord Madhusudana, Kamsa may not know that you are already born. Therefore, I request you to conceal this four-armed form of your lordship, which holds the four symbols of Vishnu, namely the conch shell, the disc, the club, and the lotus flower. My dear Lord, at the end of the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation, you put the whole universe within your abdomen. Still, by your unalloyed mercy, you have appeared in my womb. I am surprised that you imitate the activities of ordinary human beings just to please your devotee. On hearing the prayers of Devaki, the Lord replied, my dear mother, in the millennium of Svayambhuva Manu, my father, Vasudeva, was living as one of the Prajapatis. That's Vasudeva. I hope I'm differentiating these names. Vasudeva, like Vas, like bus or rust. And Vasudeva, with the long A on the second letter. Vasudeva, who is Krishna. Vasudeva is his father in this material world. My father, Vasudeva, was living as one of the Prajapatis. His name at that time was Sutapa, and you were his wife named Prijni. At that time, when Lord Brahma was desiring to increase population, he requested you to generate offspring. You controlled your senses and performed severe austerities. By practicing the breathing exercises of the yoga system, both you and your husband could tolerate all the influences of the material laws. The rainy season, the onslaught of the wind, and the scorching heat of the sunshine. You also executed all religious principles. In this way, you were able to cleanse your heart and control the influences of the material laws. So these austerities and mortifications are not just, you know, as a matter of exercise. therefore the purpose of cleansing the heart and controlling the influences of the material laws. When one performs these as an offering to the Supreme Lord, so that he or she may become purified more and more so through these practices, because there is a certain amount of discipline, a certain amount of pain, a certain amount of trouble in undertaking these. So that pain is a way of, as we might say, counteracting the pain that we have given in the form of karmic action and reaction. So by counteracting that pain, by taking the pain, it nullifies the reaction, and one then has no such reaction. That's one of the major reasons that one undertakes these pains and suffering. Of course, one has to be very careful with this type of thing. It is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that sometimes persons go to extremes. And in doing that, going to the extremes, what happens is that they become very puffed up. They think they're very great. For example, standing on one leg for a long period of time, or sitting underwater for a week or 2 weeks, or lying on a bed of nails. All these require a certain amount of pain and suffering in them. So if one does that, he may begin to think, I am so wonderful, I'm so great, I'm so amazing. No one else is doing this, and probably hardly anyone else can do it. So just see my opulence. This goes on in the mind. It's not like a conversation like I'm saying it. But it goes on very much in the mind. And when one sees someone doing anything to the extent that he himself has done, he'll say in his mind, no, he's not as good as him. He's got a long way to go before he reaches me. So he's thinking in this kind of false way. And this pride is the killer. As we know, King Indra, because he was very, very proud, he even tried to kill Krishna. He tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. But he could not succeed. And finally, he got the point and said, what am I? For a whole week, I've been trying to drown them all. Like, don't drown. This little Krishna is holding up this Govardhan Hill. And I can't get any water down there. But as soon as the water touches the ground, it dries up. So what am I going to do? I'm a loser. I lost. It's over. So therefore, he had the good sense to finally apologize to Krishna and even declare what the fault was, that he was very proud, very puffed up, because he was the king of the demigods. And being the king, he's always being bowed down to. People are always saying, my lord, all glories to King Indra, all glories to this, all glories to that, like that. And they do that also to sannyasis too, I must say. So we have to counteract all that stuff, because that's real bad. It's good for the person who says it. It's not good for the person who receives it. And it's also bad for the person who receives it by going, no, don't do that. That's bad too, because when a person is showing, a person is bowing or showing love or showing some affection or giving some prasadam, that is Krishna's love coming through that individual. So we don't refuse Krishna's love. We accept it very graciously, but in our heart of hearts, we say, this is coming from you, Lord, and I now give it back to you, Lord. And even when I'm eating it, I'm taking it in my mind. Please, may it all go to you in the form of loving, devotional service. So that way, you don't get contaminated. Coming from Krishna, going back to Krishna, and this is the problem that many of us, anyone who is in a position of some notability or notoriety, that he has to take precaution. And if he wants to be able to continue in that position and not have a horrendous fall like King Indra did, then he has to take these precautions that I just mentioned. And if you don't do that, it becomes a poisonous mess. Every time you begin thinking, yes, I'm wonderful, I'm great, I'm glorious, there's no one like me. What happens is that, or people are saying, I love what you did. You know, I did the reading, I love your kirtans. Oh, I love the way you dress the deities. It's so, and you don't take it to the next level. The next level is, the only way I could do it, Lord, is by your mercy, by your grace, by your affection. And because you gave that to me, therefore the credit goes to you. And if it goes to you, then who am I? I'm not the big shot that he just called and labeled. I'm just same old small me. And he just goes on doing his service without any of the attachments, because he knows that that kind of attachment is the kind of thing that really harms, it hurts, it poisons our spiritual life. And it happens very gradually. One may say, well, how do you know? How can you tell that those things are going on within us? When you begin to see Krishna withdrawing some of the mercy that he's given, some of the power, some of the opulences, when Krishna begins to take them away little by little, the devotee begins to wonder, and he then starts to pray, well, where is this? Where is that power I had? Where is that incredible degree of energy that I had? Etc. But no answer. Just more taken away as the devotee becomes more and more puffed up and proud. So the result is this. Very often when a person, all these things are taken away from the devotee, he feels empty. He feels depressed. He feels like he has nothing, like he has no one, like his greatest friend, which is his greatest friend, Krishna, has deserted him. And as a result of that desertion, he feels, as I said, so like a desert. Now, how do you deal with a desert type of consciousness? When you're not feeling any pleasure, you're not feeling any joy, you're not feeling any sensation, it's just blah. Well, what do you do when you're feeling blah? Then you have to outdo the blah, and you go to more sense pleasure. I've just given you the cause of most fall downs, by the way. You have nothing. You're empty. Cars can't run on empty. Devotees can't run on an empty heart. So what happens is that one begins to indulge himself. It could be more food. It could be more clothing crazy. We start buying lots of clothes. It could be buying a few more houses or cars. Or it can be having more women or more men, whatever it may be, to increase sexual pleasure. He wants to stimulate himself in such a way so that he can feel alive, because he feels dead. It's the fact. I know. I had this personal experience. I won't tell you how much, but it is. So that's the problem. We can avoid all this, though, if we truly understand that a devotee should not be eating poison of pride and arrogance and condescension and all those kinds of feelings which tell us we're something that we're really not. And that's the main point. So I want to get back to the reading. Can anybody tell me where I left off? You know? I can hear you a little bit louder. Okay. God, thank you. Well, I'm still on page... Well, forget the number. In this way. Okay. Well, I see it's pretty close. You also executed all religious principles. In this way, you are able to cleanse your heart and control the influences of the material laws. In executing your austerity, you used to eat only the leaves of the trees which fell to the ground. Then, with a steady mind and controlled sex drive, you worshiped me, desiring some wonderful benediction from me. Both of you practiced severe austerities for 12,000 years by the calculation of the demigods. That's not 12,000 our years. Remember, every there's six months when a demigod, one day of a demigod is six of our months. And 2 days of the demigods is 12 of our months. So if you do the multiplication, and those of you who are A-plus math students and want to do that now, you're welcome to do that. And if you come up with the conclusion of 12,000 times what? I think it's I think 1 year is 360,000, but you can check it and let me know if I didn't just calculate that, by the way. So Both of you practiced severe austerities for 12,000 years by the calculation of the demigods. During that time, your mind was always absorbed in me. When you were executing devotional service and always thinking of me within your heart, I was very much pleased with you. O sinless mother, your heart is therefore always pure. At that time also, I appeared before you in this form just to fulfill your desire. And I asked you to ask whatever you desired. At that time, you wished to have me born as your son. Although you saw me personally, instead of asking for your complete liberation from material bondage under the influence of my energy, you asked me to become your son. In other words, to appear in the material world, the Lord selected his mother and father, namely Prajni and Sutapa, respectively. Whenever the Lord comes as a human being, he must have a mother and a father. So he selected Prajni and Sutapa perpetually as his mother and father. And on account of this, neither Prajni nor Sutapa could ask the Lord for liberation, because they had already asked that he be born as their son. Now, Prabhupada says liberation is not so important as the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The Lord could have awarded Prajni and Sutapa immediate liberation, but he preferred to keep them within this material world for his different appearances, as will be explained in the following verses. On receiving the benediction from the Lord to become his father and mother, Prajni and Sutapa retired from the activities of austerity and lived as husband and wife in order to beget a child who was the Supreme Lord himself. In due course of time, Prajni became pregnant and gave birth to the child. The Lord spoke to Devaki and Vasudeva. At that time, my name was Prajni Garbha. In the next millennium, you took birth as Aditi and Kashyapa, and I became your child of the name Upendra, also known as Vamana. At that time, my form was just like a dwarf, and for this reason, I was known as Vamanadev. I gave you the benediction that I would take birth as your son three times. The first time, I was known as Prajni Garbha, born of Prajni and Sutapa. In the next birth, I was Upendra, born of Aditi and Kashyapa. And now for the third time, I am born of Krishna. I am born as Krishna from you, Devaki, and Vasudeva. I have appeared in this Vishnu form just to convince you that I am the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, again taken birth. I could have appeared just like an ordinary child, but in that way, you would not have believed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken birth in your womb. My dear father and mother, you have therefore raised me many times as your child, with great affection and love, and I am therefore very much pleased and obliged to you. And I assure you that this time, you shall go back home, back to Godhead, on account of your perfection in your mission. I know that you are very concerned about me and afraid of Kamsa. Therefore, I order you to take me immediately to Gokul and exchange me for the daughter who has just been born to Yashoda. Having spoken thus to his father and mother, the Lord turned himself into an ordinary child in their presence and remained silent. That means all the jewelry, all the ornaments that he was holding, that's all gone. He just looks like an ordinary baby. Being ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva prepared to take his son from the delivery room. Exactly at that time, a daughter was born to Nanda and Yashoda. She was Yogamaya, the internal potency of the Lord. By the influence of this internal potency, Yogamaya, all the residents of Kamsa's palace, especially the doorkeepers, were overwhelmed with deep sleep. And all the palace doors opened, although they were barred and shackled with iron chains. This is the influence of Yogamaya. She travels from Gokul to the prison, and it was by her influence that all the doors opened, the shackles opened, so that Vasudeva could fulfill the request of the Lord. The night was very dark, but as soon as Vasudeva took Krishna on his lap and went out, he could see everything just as in the sunlight. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Krishna is just like sunlight, and wherever there is Krishna, the illusory energy, which is compared to darkness, cannot remain. When Vasudeva was carrying Krishna, the darkness of the night disappeared. All the prison doors automatically opened. At the same time, there was thunder in the sky and severe rainfall. While Vasudeva was carrying his son Krishna in the falling rain, Lord Shesha, in the shape of a serpent, Sheshanaga, spread his head or hood over the head of Vasudeva, and so that he would not be hampered by the rainfall. Vasudeva came onto the bank of the Yamuna and saw that the water of the Yamuna was roaring with waves and that the whole span was full of foam. Still in that furious feature, the river gave passage to Vasudeva to cross, just as the great Indian Ocean gave a path to Lord Ram when he was bridging over the gulf. This is also similar to the Israelites in the Bible crossing the Red Sea. They were being chased by Pharaoh's soldiers, and the only way they could get free would be to cross the Red Sea. So that's what. But how could they get free? Because the Red Sea is deep. So Moses, he put up his dunda like so, and then he said, "Make a passage." So what happened was that all the water, which was this way, started going up into falls, left and right, and therefore there was the ground. And all the Israelites, they went down onto the ground and crossed the Red Sea, and then after they had crossed, The Pharaoh, he ordered his men to go and follow them. So when they just tried to follow them, Moses then said, "Okay, water, close." And all the water went from this way to this way, and they went under, and that was the end of them. So the Israelites then, they wandered for 40 years in the desert. But they were at least free to wander in that position. So all the prison... Yeah, I already read that. Yes, as the Indian Ocean gave path to Lord Ram when he was bridging over the gulf. In this way, Vasudeva crossed the river Yamuna. On the other side, he went to the place of Nanda Maharaj, situated in Gokul, where he saw that all the cowherd men were fast asleep. And I just want to interrupt the story for a moment here. It's very important. Remember, Vasudeva has little Krishna, he's carrying him, and in the house of Nanda and Yashoda is in the birth room where she gave birth, and lying on the bed is not just a little girl, Yogamaya, but there's a little boy next to her. You'll not find that in the Krishna book, and you will not find it in the Bhagavatam, but you will find it in some of the writings of our Goswamis. And for those who have the understanding or desire to be complete and pure in the rasa of Krishna, they must know the difference between the two Krishnas that appeared. It's only one Krishna, but in two different expressions, two different mellows, or two different moods. So, in Yashoda's room, there was this little boy, Krishna. So Krishna, he was the twin of the Yogamaya, the internal energy. So what happened at that point, since Krishna is always in Vrindavan, he never leaves Vrindavan. He may be invisible, he may be visible, but always his place is Vrindavan. And all his pastimes, which we know as very peaceful, friendly, frolicsome, smiling, lovable, joking, very peaceful, are all being done by Vrindavan Krishna. Okay? Vrindavan Krishna doesn't mean it's a different Krishna than the one that Vasudev is carrying. Vasudev is carrying what is known as Vasudev Krishna. Vasudev Krishna is involved with all things related to fighting and battling, talking rough. It's a different personality, although the same person. Remember, Krishna can manifest any number of personalities because he's infinite. He's omnipotent. He can do whatever he likes. So, when we see in the Krishna book the fighting going on between Krishna and one of the demons, Krishna at that time is manifesting his Vasudev personality, the fighting personality. And the other personality, the Vrindavan personality, when we see him with the gopis of Vrindavan, when we see him doing cute little games with his boyfriends, when they are just having fun, running after bird shadows, or clapping their hands and singing, this is Vrindavan Krishna. Again, one Krishna manifesting two specific personalities for two specific rasas. One is the rasa of friendship, which Krishna is manifesting for all his friends, Subala and Stoka Krishna, and like that. So, therefore, it's important to understand that that Krishna who is Vrindavan Krishna, he transfers himself immediately to where Vasudeva is, and he merges with the other Krishna, which we called Vasudev Krishna. So therefore, in the one form, the two different personalities exist. And at certain times, Krishna manifests the Vrindavan personality because that is for his specific devotees who worship him, or I wouldn't say worship him, but love him and relate to him and become close to him in that particular rasa. Or he may manifest the other personality, which is the one we see in Mathura, the one we see in Dwarka, another personality, which is the fighting personality. So, therefore, those who admire Krishna as a warrior, you know, as a soldier, as a glorious hero, then those persons, they have their rasa, and they will be satisfied through that particular relationship. So I wanted to get that really clear for everyone. Now, I'm coming near the end of the chapter. Yes. So, he, meaning Vasudev, took the opportunity to silently enter the house of Yashoda, and without difficulty, he exchanged the son for the baby girl, newly born there. Then, after entering the house very silently and exchanging the boy for the girl, he returned to the prison of Kamsa and silently put the girl on the lap of Devaki. He again clamped the shackles on himself so that Kamsa could not recognize that so many things had happened. Mother Yashoda understood that a child had been born to her, but because she was very tired from the labor of childbirth, she fell fast asleep. When she awoke, she could not remember whether she had given birth to a male or a female child. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the third chapter of Krishna, the birth of Lord Krishna. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, does anyone have any questions to ask me that I cannot answer? If anyone has a question or has a comment on some of the points that I made, which could be elongated or could be You have, yes. You might get my way through a mic. Probably everybody's a little confused on this. It took me years to understand. Yes, go ahead.
Hare Krishna. I was just a little bit confused about the last explanation you were just saying. Did you say that when Vasudev brought Vasudev, that there was also another baby boy on the lap of Mother Yashoda with Yogamaya? That's
yes.
what I thought.
Yes.
Okay.
And that, oh, that was, well, let me do one thing.
And that boy was Krishna? Or?
Yeah, it's Krishna. And I would like to give you some authoritative statement on that so you don't think that I'm just making that up.
So that means that Mother Yashoda had twin babies, Krishna
yes.
and Yogamaya.
That's exactly what the purport says. Here it is. Okay, for those of you who want a little more proof, 10.3.47, 10th canto, 3rd chapter, 47th verse, again, the birth of Lord Krishna, starting, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses that Krishna appeared simultaneously as the son of Devaki and as the son of Yashoda, along with the spiritual energy, Yogamaya. As the son of Devaki, he first appeared as Vishnu, and because Vasudeva was not in the position of pure affection for Krishna, Vasudeva worshipped the son as Lord Vishnu. Okay? Remember, they're different rasas. This is a rasa, what we call a formal rasa, like the warrior. And then there's the informal, as I am reading now. Yashoda, however, pleased her son Krishna without understanding his godhood. This is the difference between Krishna as the son of Yashoda and as the son of Devaki. This is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the authority of the book, a very famous and very great book by Sanatana Goswami, known as Hari Vamsa. Okay? And that's where this is information which comes from our great predecessor, Acharya. And you will not find this in the, at least the Puranas that I have read and the ones that we deal with in our daily activity. Yes, Prabhu?
So yesterday there was a class about, Krishna leaving Vrindavan to Mathura. So is there a similar incident such as that with Vrindavan Krishna staying in Vrindavan and then Vasudev Krishna?
Well, Mathura is often considered a part of Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. It's an extension of Vrindavan, only yeah. it's there that they have all the... It's like the township, and Vrindavan is like the village ship. Mm-hmm. And the township is where, you know, all the factories might be, if mm-hmm. you want to call them that, where there the warriors are. There are hardly any warriors in Vrindavan, but you do find them in Mathura. And when you go from Vrindavan to Mathura, it's not that long a distance from it. So I hope that answers your question, that as far as Krishna leaving Vrindavan, when he goes to Mathura, he's not really leaving Vrindavan because it's an extension. But if he enters into a different personality, that's different. The different personalities, I've explained the two different... I've explained the Vasudeva personality in which he begins to take on the mood and the feeling of the warrior. And he does that. For example, when he's walking down the street and he's meeting different people, such as the flowers seller, flower maker, and then he meets the cloth dyer, and he asks the cloth dyer, could you please give me some of that cloth? And the cloth dyer speaks to him in a very arrogant, condescending way. Who are you to ask? This is for the king. You don't ask me for this thing. You're going to get in trouble. And Krishna thought that most people in Mathura, they know that Krishna is a great personality. They've heard about all of his amazing feats that he has performed. So this washer, dyer, is talking to Krishna in a very, very uppity fashion. And Krishna wanted to set a lesson that that's not the way you address the Lord. And that's not the way you treat the Lord. And the way you treat the Lord is as follows. Boom! No, he took the side of the... Boom! cut his head right off with the side of his pump. So he can use any part of his body for any purpose that he wants. So there you have some, that's Vasudev Krishna, no question about it. Okay, so, but we shouldn't get too much caught up in all of these things. It's primarily for rasa. The persons who have a particular rasa, they have to stay within the confines of that rasa and not go out into another rasa, such as the fighting and all of these other things, which are not going to help the devotee develop in pure love of God in that rasa of friendship as opposed to heroics or fighting. Okay, I hope it made it clear.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah. Anyone else? No one else? No comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, go ahead.
In the scenario situation where you talked about how if we become puffed up and then it's a spiral. So how to avoid that situation and always be situated. To remain in a humble state of mind.
Yeah. Is that a comment that you want, or you want to add something to that?
No, I'm asking you also.
Okay. I just want to add to that. There's a very nice verse in the Bhagavatam, which you maybe know, in which it is stated that one should thread that verse around with the garland of the holy name and always be conscious of it for continuous remembrance. Yeah. In other words, what you're quoting is what we should be doing is saying that all the time. And then when we're chanting actually Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and when we stop chanting it, that's when we need to remind ourselves again to keep on chanting it. Anything else that you want to say?
No, that's all.
No. Okay. You want a question? Yes, good and loud, because I'm getting old and deaf.
Hi, my name is Sean. Thank you. That was great. I'm definitely a novice. A newcomer.
Okay.
Beginner. I'm curious as to what you'd recommend in terms of what I should read or listen to. To get, this is a lot. I've studied Christianity, Judaism.
Sure.
And I really don't know what's going on, but I'm attracted energetically to what's going on here.
Yes.
So do you have any recommendations on what I can do to get more knowledgeable on this?
Yes. Well, read from the book that I was reading from, which is known as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's an all-time favorite. Many years ago, back in 1976, some of you who were here might remember that I began reading it at the prasadam time. And I read it actually for 23 years almost in a row. At that time, I got to learn it that way, and many of the devotees who stayed on or didn't go to other temples, they got to learn it. So many things you don't immediately understand initially or immediately, but by continuous reading, you become purified in your mind, in your thoughts, your body, and that purification enables you as a grace, so to speak, as a blessing, to understand more and more and more of it. In other words, that's a gift that Krishna is giving for sticking it out. Even if you were bored, even if you didn't care, even if you wish you could get out of that prasadamum, or why do they have to have this reading, or any of that, but for sticking it out and keeping to it and concentrating, what happens is that Krishna awards you. Krishna says, those who... what is that? Yeah, that's all right, it's fine. That's when you're youthful, it comes up real fast. When you're an old geezer like me, it takes like a half a minute. It's like a bubble that kind of floats up like this, as opposed to... Whoosh. So yes, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path. So the surrender is what means, even though you're not going to understand everything, but you will understand some things. And those things will purify you to the extent that you will be able to understand more things and more things. And eventually, I don't know if in this life, but you will understand just about everything. But your feeling will be, this is quite interesting. Your feeling will be that you don't know anything. The very advanced, most humble of souls, they think, well, I don't know anything. But what happens is that when you hear me talk these things, it's just that the Supreme Lord is working from my heart and giving me these words. This is what Ramananda Roy used to do. Ramananda Roy was one of the most greatest, most gifted and glorious of, you might say, bhakti philosophers. And even Lord Chaitanya used to go to him to hear the philosophy from him. So, therefore, what this means is that the Lord, who's in the heart, can make you a sage in 1 second, or he can make you an outright idiot in a half a second. So the very great souls, they take a humble position and they consider that whatever I'm gaining now, whatever you're hearing from me now, that's coming from God's mercy. So why should I take credit of it? It's not mine, it's his. So forth it's his. So that way they actually feel very stupid, imbecilic. They even call themselves that. People say, what are you saying like that? Come on, you know more than anybody. That's what you think. I don't know anything. But I pray to the Lord, and suddenly, like a big waterfall, this comes pouring into my mind, and I'm able to say these things. In fact, Ramananda Roy used to say to Lord Chaitanya, can you tell me a little bit more on this particular point or principle of bhakti? Can you tell me something? And then Ramananda Roy says, I did it in an accent. By the way, I have these audio books. So Ramananda Roy, he said, I'm not doing anything. You are doing everything. You're talking through me. I'm just a fool. I'm a shudra. He was talking like that. And yet, Lord Chaitanya himself was going to him to hear guidance like that. So therefore, when you hear someone say, I'm really a fool, I'm an idiot, I'm this and that, don't necessarily believe it. Because if you do, it might be offensive. Especially when you see that the person is very humble and the way he's treating you, the way he's acting, the way he's trying to, showing respect for you and the like. Okay? I think we can call it now. Everybody's knees is probably ready for an operation. And we'll thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to the devotees. All glories to Lord Sri Krishna on this auspicious Janmashtami today. Hare Krishna. Wait. I'll take my Lord away.